Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Yeah. You know, I don't mind the worst. Here's what bothers me about the word slime ball. Not that he said slime ball, but that's what an 11-year-old says. Like, I know you're angry and you really want to lay something on him. Slime ball? That's all you got? I mean, really, do you need any more evidence that this guy just didn't graduate from 12 years old? I don't care that you're mad at him. I understand. You get to own that emotion, sir. I'm bothered by the way you put it.
Well, and maybe that's what, I mean, my out. This has nothing to do with policy, what he's done as a governor, governing. But it's just, I'm bothered by the dignity or lack of dignity of it. That's it for me, not the 12-year-oldness. Maybe it's the same thing. But
well,
it's the president, and slime ball shouldn't come from the president, I don't think.
Well, let's ask the third president of the United States what he thinks about that. Thomas Jefferson joins us. Happy birthday, President Jefferson. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, citizen.
Jump in there. What do you make of the sort of dignity of the word slime ball, the president to the former FBI director?
Well, we had no FBI, of course. It was a much simpler time, a more agrarian time in American history. But, you know, Hamilton, Alexander Hamilton, hated me, and I didn't like him very much either. And the worst thing that he ever called me was an intellectual voluptuary. So we were pretty polite. Although, I should say, John Adams said of Hamilton, I'm sure you know this, that he was the bastard brat of a Scotch peddler. So depending on the person and the provocation, things could get a little bit nasty in my era, too.
Hold on, I want to try that one, though. Oh, yeah, Steve Bertrand, you are so stupid. You are an intellectual voluptuary.
Thank you.
What did I say there, President Jefferson?
Well, what Hamilton meant was that I was unfit for the presidency because I was a philosopher and I had read too many books of the Enlightenment, and I indulged my habit of deep reading in the history of Western civilization, and it had made me somebody who was insufficiently grounded in the real world.
Yeah, I don't think that's what he meant. So there was no FBI in your day, huh?
1908 is your FBI. In my time, we had a tiny little spy network. There was a spy network during the Revolution that worked for George Washington, and I think no administration didn't have people that, in some sense of the term, could be called spies. But as I was president of the United States between 1801 and 1809, for 8 years, I rode around the city of Washington and the District of Columbia on my horse. I went to grocery stores and greengrocers myself, and I never had any escort, no security team or individual of any sort at any time.
Yeah, well, then maybe you're not the right person to answer this question, because evidently James Comey talks in, this is not why we asked you to come on today, but just humor me for a moment. James Comey did ask the president to maybe disprove some things or cover for him. And it sounds as though the president really didn't understand what the appropriate relationship should be between the White House and the FBI. But I wonder what you make of the FBI sort of doing the president's personal bidding and what firewall we do or don't have between the two.
Well, I would just say this, that under our system, every officer, whether it's the vice president or the speaker of the House or a cabinet secretary or a functionary at the ports of New York, every national officer works for the people of the United States. Not for the executive. They answer sometimes to Congress if there's oversight, but their ultimate authority comes from the people themselves, and their responsibility to the people and to the Constitution is dramatically higher than their responsibility to any single individual, including the President of the United States. You know, had Congress wanted to create a security force merely for the president to protect him from physical harm and to protect him from attacks on his reputation, Congress would have done so. But instead, apparently, long after my time, 100 years after my presidency, Congress created a separate bureau of national police force, and it doesn't answer to the President of the United States. So I think that the current occupant of the White House may have a misunderstanding of how government works.
You know, and I never thought about it before until now either, to be honest with you. I know there's some history with previous administrations here, but it sure wasn't top of mind, and I might have made that mistake, too. I'd say, hey, you're my FBI, like I have my own generals, too, and I could see the temptation to ask them to do work like that for you. But then, do you have an opinion about what would happen or should happen if the president fires Robert Mueller?
I don't know. I do know this, that Mr. Madison and the other 54 men who created the Constitution in 1787, I was not among them, built an impeachment clause into the Constitution. And they knew that the time would come. They hoped it would never come, when a president or other national officer must be forcefully retired when he's a menace to the security of our Constitution. And they then developed the impeachment clause, which is a quite restrictive one. It says that the national officer can only be impeached for high crimes and misdemeanors, and the House votes that by simple majority. But the Senate sits in as a jury for the trial, and there must be a two-thirds majority to convict and remove a president or a Supreme Court justice.
So you didn't ask.
It's a political system, not a legal one, and the bar was set extremely high.
It's a political system, not a legal one, right. That is, you need not have broken a law, but if politically we don't want you to be president, the Congress can throw him out. That's the impeachment. But is there a legal remedy, too? What if you did find that the president broke a law? I guess that would be a high crime and misdemeanor, and then you would politically impeach him, right? Yeah.
Right. We can't allow routine legal attacks on national officers, because that would be a very slippery slope and would soon be misused. And so the Constitution makers said that the president is really the principal officer of the national government. He's the one individual who represents every American, and he can only be removed if he has committed a high crime or misdemeanor and the Congress decides in both houses, one, a supermajority, that he must go. Now, I will tell you this. I thought that the impeachment clause should be more liberally drawn. It should be high crimes, misdemeanors, incompetence, senility, or behavior that is entirely out of keeping with America's Republican ideals. It seems to me it needs a little more elasticity, and the fact that you have never successfully convicted, you've twice impeached, but never successfully convicted a president, probably says that restriction is too difficult and that it should be loosened somewhat.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. You've always said that the people get to have whoever they want, even if it is a president who sometimes seems ridiculous. Why take the voice of the people away?
Because 4 years can be a very long time. So let's say that Aaron Burr had been installed as president instead of me in the contested election of 1800. As you know, the House of Representatives took 36 ballots finally to grant me the office that I had been voted in. If he had become president, let's say the next day he decides to invade Mexico or to send police to cancel all newspapers in the city of Boston or New York, you may not want to wait for the people to weigh in 4 years later. It may be necessary to remove a criminal president between the two quadrennial elections.
Okay, let me ask you this then. The current president included, all the way to your day, which presidents do you think would have met at least your bar of senility or incompetence or whatever else you said there? Who
I
else?
I can't speak very authoritatively after my time, but I can say a little bit about this. First of all, John Adams probably would not have survived his full one term as president had there been a system to rid ourselves of somebody who was clearly not performing adequately in that role. He was taking us down a very dangerous path. In your century, the 20th century, President Wilson had a stroke and was mentally incapacitated for a significant part of his second term. There's a clear case for gentle removal from office. You've had several presidents since then who have committed grievous errors, some of them constitutional violations, and they have survived because the impeachment process is so difficult and because the American people, there's a reverence. There's a reverence for our system, and the American people come to that taboo of the political removal of a sitting president with the greatest hesitation. And I'm guessing that in your own case, no matter how bad things get with the current incumbent, the people will fall short of wanting to push that button, because the minute you do this, you will routinize the idea of impeachment, and it may turn out to be the law of unintended consequences.
Yeah, well, I hear that. I understand that. But I'll bet I'll live the rest of my life without a president who is as unroutine as this one is. But Bill Clinton...
Well, you have this opportunity, and all you have to do, it's a democracy.
It's not going to happen. He's not going to get impeached. The two-thirds of the Senate will not impeach this president. That's my prediction.
I think that you're probably right, sir, but I would say this, that the American people have a deep commitment to constitutional order, and the time may come, I'm not saying that it will with this president, but the time may come when the people's sense of decorum and due process and constitutional norms is so deeply violated, so offended by the behavior of one or another president that they will insist that a reluctant Congress do the right thing.
But I got to ask you this. I mean, what was more undecorous than the president preying on a young female intern and having a relationship with her in the White House? So, and Bill Clinton was not impeached for that and was not convicted anyway. He was impeached about lying about that. Do you think that President Clinton should have been thrown out of office?
Well, that depends on how you define character. So, you know, private behavior is a bad thing. It may or may not be an impeachable offense. Doing that in the White House brings it into the public square. That adds some gravity to it. Lying about it in a civil suit deepens the crime dramatically. But let me say this. I need hardly say this, and it applies to me, to Mr. Hamilton, to almost anyone who ever lived.
Yeah.
People are not going to tell the truth about their sexual lives, period.
I have a question about that. There's something that got posted on the internet today about you. And you know what also is in the news about you these days, Mr. President, is what's happened to some of your statues. Are you familiar with this?
I'm told.
All right, stand by.
I believe it that stand my by. Statue at the University of Virginia has been defaced by ruffians.
That and what to get the third president for his birthday. Thomas Jefferson joins us in Chicago one or two times a year. We stand on a stage at one of the colleges in the area, College of DuPage. We were at Elgin not that long ago. And TJ is going to join us again in the not-too-distant future. More about that in a couple of minutes. And his answer to a couple of other questions. You may have one, too. Thomas Jefferson is the third president of the United States. By the way, Olaf, it just dawned on me, I don't recall the next date that TJ is coming to town. It's in August. I know you can look that up while we're finishing this conversation. Well, I'm sorry that some of your statues are being defaced, let alone at your own University of Virginia, sir.
Well, these things happen. You know, we burned effigies of George III, and we burned the British flag. And, you know, people have a right to protest, and sometimes that protest will be obnoxious. I prefer an essay or a letter to the editor or a polite pamphlet, but people can't always be polite in a democracy. But, sir, you mentioned my birthday.
Yes.
I do have a list of gifts, if you have a pen.
All right, hold on. Violetta, write these down. Steve, I don't know if you're going to shop.
I'm ready. I love birthdays.
Thomas Jefferson.
I have six things on my list. They're very brief.
Wow.
First, a case of Chateau Yquem. One of the great wines of France.
That's Steve's area. Steve, I'll let you pick the Chateau E.
Secondly, I would like a high-end scanning and copying machine. Imagine what I could have done with a scanner.
We'll get him a fax machine, and he'll be marveling at it.
I will revolutionize the world. Third, I would like a rototiller, because I have huge gardens, and I you know slavery is a big problem in my life. This would solve a very large number. Fourth, I would like a large cistern made of plastic, because when I had these terrible problems with water at Monticello, and I made all these cisterns out of wood and out of ceramics and so on, they all leaked. If I had a 5,000-gallon plastic cistern, all my difficulties would be over.
Gallons.
And perhaps fifth, I would like a loan of $108,000. If that doesn't seem
$108,000,
we can get Michael Cohen to take out a mortgage on this house.
The president's attorney will call you after I'm done with you here. That's five. Did you say six or five gifts, sir?
Well, we'll leave it at five. But you see, I mean, I would settle for the Chateau Yquem.
Yeah.
But really, if I could choose any one of those, even more than the money, I died $108,000 in debt. Even more than that, what I would want would be the scanning and copying machine. When I sold my library to Congress, I wrote out a very, very long catalog of the books, and then I made a handwritten copy of it. This took days. Imagine what I could do with your technologies.
Yeah, how many letters did you write in your lifetime?
I wrote 26,000 or so and received about half again that number, and I kept them all. But it was very complex because I would write a letter in draft, and then I would write a fair copy, and then I would make a copy of the fair copy so I could send one and keep the other. This is exceedingly tedious. I mean, I don't mean to call attention to myself, but I had better things to do than to copy out my correspondence. And now you just put your piece of paper down on some sort of glass, and by some miracle, you have as many copies as you want.
To say, hey, Lewis, give me a copy of this thing I wrote to Madison, and just file it for me. Boom.
Well, you know, that's it, sir, because Lewis brought back 29 vocabularies of Indian peoples that he met on his journey,
yeah.
And he gave them to me in trust. And on the way back to Monticello during my retirement, my luggage was looted by ruffians. And when they found those papers, they threw them into the James River. Had I been able to make a photocopy of them in the White House, this would be an enormous difference in our understanding of Native American culture from the age of Meriwether Lewis. So think of what is lost for want of a scanner.
August 18th, Thomas Jefferson will be in town again on November 10th. But if you want to ask the president questions that I didn't have time to ask here, and we got a bunch of them, make sure that you buy tickets to the August 18th show. It says here, I don't even know where it's going to be. Do we know where you're going to be performing? I think last we were at the College of Elgin Community College, and we usually go to College of DuPage. Don't worry, tickets aren't for sale yet. I don't know that we've locked down a location, but we do know that we have you coming to town on August 18th. So I will talk to you before then, and I will see you on stage then, sir.
And please, if you ever thought that there was a slime ball during my years, it probably was Aaron Burr.
Thought you were going to say Hamilton, but maybe you have a different epithet you want to hurl at him. No, let's not.
Hamilton was a man of character. Burr not.
Okay. Nice to talk to you, Thomas Jefferson. Happy birthday.
Thank you, citizen.
All right. You guys get him the Chateau Yquem, and I'll go to Farm and Fleet and see if I can get a 5,000-gallon cistern made of plastic.